Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
By shortwave and satellite, this is Radio Netherlands. Media Network, a weekly survey of international communication developments. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and we start in Central America, where on Monday night at 22:30 UTC, a clandestine radio station, Radio Liberacion, which translates as Radio Liberation, run by the Nicaraguan Contras, put out a recorded message by US President Reagan. The message was immediately translated into Spanish, in which the president cast doubt on the Sandinista commitment to democracy in the wake of the Guatemalan peace agreement. Earlier, though, at a news conference on Monday morning, a spokesman for the president said that the broadcast was actually made on Sunday, though it seems he made a mistake. The United Nicaraguan Opposition Group in Washington, D.C., said this mix-up alerted the Sandinistas, and the presidential message was jammed by a low buzz when it went out later this past Monday via Radio Liberacion. I called Radio Netherlands correspondent Case Ellenbaus in Managua, and discovered that the reaction from the Nicaraguan government is simply a feeling of it's business as usual. But where does Radio Liberacion's medium-wave signal come from?
It's transmitted from Salvador, as far as we know here.
And is it well received in Managua?
No, it's very hard to receive it here in Managua. It's the best received in the northern part of Nicaragua, but further south, after the line Matagalpa-Jinotega, it's very hard to receive.
Does the ordinary person in the street even know it exists?
Well, of course, it is, for the Nicaraguans, it is an illegal radio station, so the normal practice is the things that are illegal are very well known. So, most of the Nicaraguans know that it exists, yeah.
But what does it do all day? Is it just putting out political propaganda, or is it playing music, or what?
No, it's a lot better than former radio stations of the Contras. Before that, they had, it's called Radio 15 de Septiembre, the 15th of September, which was, only political messages and only about the military situation of the Contra. This radio station is a lot better. It's more in the style of, let's say, Western radio stations. It also gives a lot of music, a lot of, other information. So, a normal radio station than the former Contra radio stations.
Now, this broadcast by Reagan, according to the Radio Liberacion people, they say it was jammed.
No, I think that's, as far as I know, the Nicaraguans don't even have the equipment to jam these these radio stations, so I think that's absolutely out of the question. It's just, they don't have the capacity to reach Managua, that's more the problem.
But it is an illegal radio station. Is it illegal for Nicaraguans to listen to it?
Yeah, in fact, under the state of emergency, it is illegal to listen to it, yeah.
What about the Voice of America broadcasting in Spanish to Nicaragua? It seems a bit strange that Reagan chose to use Radio Liberacion rather than taking the VOA in Spanish.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's not one of his best moves to give a message directly to the Contra radio station. It would be more normal to try the Voice of America, which is a lot better received here, especially in Managua, than the Contra radio station.
Is the Voice of America also regarded as an illegal station?
No, that's not regarded as an illegal radio station, no. You just can receive it on shortwave without any problem.
For some time, there's been a shortwave voice of the Nicaraguan Contras too, though not necessarily broadcasting from the same place as the medium-wave station. It certainly doesn't have the same operating schedule. In a report published today, the BBC Monitoring Service say that the former Voice of the UNO changed its name on the 20th of August to Radio Liberacion. Their daily Spanish shortwave broadcast appears between 01:45 to 03 hours UTC, on 5889.8 kilohertz. Now to Europe. In Paris, it appears that Radio France International is planning not one, but two new shortwave relay stations as part of a giant expansion project. Simpson Nagevitz, head of RFI's English section, has been explaining to me that the site of the Asian relay station has now been changed.
Because of the situation in Sri Lanka, we've decided to look for another site, and we hope that the work will begin on a new transmission center in Southeast Asia in 1988. The financing and the plans for the site are all complete, and now all we have to find is the place where to build it.
There was reports in the French press that that country might be Thailand, or is that not fixed?
That's right. Thailand is one of the possibilities.
You're also planning a relay station elsewhere, though.
Yes, we're planning a relay station in Reunion, the island of Reunion in the Indian Ocean, where we hope within 3 years' time to build in a first stage two transmitters of 500 kilowatts with a series of three antennae, and they will cover Madagascar, the Persian Gulf, Saudi Arabia, and the Horn of Africa. And then perhaps in a second stage, we will build another transmitter, which will be used for Southern Africa.
Now, as far as the programming side is concerned, a recent move has been that you've gone 24 hours a day in French round the clock.
Yes, we now broadcast 24 hours a day in French, and of course, we've also had changes for several of the other languages. We're broadcasting now in 12 languages, including French, and there have been some substantial changes within this context of 24-hour broadcasting in English as well. For instance, in English now we broadcast at 2, at 3:30, 4:15, 11:10, and 1600 universal time. And we also have a bilingual disc jockey program from 3 to 5 universal time, an English-French disc jockey at that hour, 3 to 5 universal time. And this program is mainly designed for the east coast of the United States.
But is your focus still mainly on Africa, though, with the program Paris Calling Africa?
Well, that's still our prestige program, our hour-long program at 1600 universal time. But we hope at the end of September perhaps to change the format a bit, and the first half hour will be devoted to international and French news and features and music, and then the second half hour to African news, music, and features with a reinforcement of African features. And I should also mention that we now have an English language program at 11:10 universal time, which is broadcast to North America, Central America, South America, Europe, including Eastern Europe and Africa, and it goes out on 20 frequencies.
Have you had a lot of response to this these changes from the listeners?
Well, we've had some response. The English language listeners enjoy our new schedule, but I must admit that it's taking time for our French language listeners to understand that on the same wavelengths at different times we can broadcast in English and in French from Radio France International.
Radio France International.
Britain and the United States aren't the only countries with plans for a worldwide television service, as Dorothy Weirs now reports.
The president of RFO, the radio and television channel for French overseas territories and departments, has presented a plan for the creation of a Francophone television agency, which would enter operation at the upcoming summit of Francophone leaders to be held in Quebec at the end of next week. Initially, the agency, called the Centre for Multilateral Exchanges of Francophone News, would be non-commercial and would not distribute news to non-Francophone countries. However, within 2 years, it would become a true Francophone television agency, with a network of correspondents throughout the world. According to RFO President Jean-Claude Michaud, it would be the first North-South project with a real trilateral cooperation involving French-speaking countries in North America, Europe, and Africa. The agency would need a budget of between $3 and $4 million and could use RFO facilities. However, this would not give France a greater role in the agency than other francophone countries.
Media Network, bringing satellite technology down to earth.
We go now to London, where other developments have been happening in the field of satellite radio. Mark Deutsch is responsible for audience development at the BBC External Services in Bush House. Two streams of BBC programmes are currently going out on satellite. One stream is purely in English, the World Service. The other in a variety of European and Asian languages. That started at the beginning of June. The news now is that the BBC started distributing its programmes on a second satellite, ECS-1, as of last week.
Well, at the moment we're using both satellites at once. The idea was that we should go for a 24-hour service on ECS-1 because we thought that this would give much better coverage, particularly in southern parts of Europe. And also the Intelsat circuit gives us only 8 hours at present, which was not really enough to satisfy what we thought the market would be for rebroadcasting. So we are running both satellites together. That will probably only continue until the end of December, when our free experimental period with Intelsat runs out.
Now, you're on the ECS satellite, but you're hitching a ride, so to speak. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We are using a transponder which is already being used for television. As it's already on and working, it's fairly easy for us to sneak in and use a couple of subcarriers within the transponder without, in fact, affecting what is done for the main television user.
Now, the main television user is a super channel in this case, but it's not like a television teletext system, because you're actually putting out radio programmes when super channel's off the air.
Well, yes, we are. It doesn't really matter, as I say, what the television service is doing at the time. We hope that the telecom authorities are not going to interrupt the transponder when the television is off the air. That's something we hadn't planned for, because when we first thought of this idea, the television service was in fact running 24 hours a day. Were that to happen, it would of course be rather inconvenient, but I think we're hoping for the best at present.
How long is the experiment for?
This is for a year.
Is it an expensive proposition compared to, say, terrestrial broadcasting from medium wave or shortwave transmitters?
I think that's a very difficult question to answer briefly. The amount of money involved is considerable in our terms. On the other hand, it is very difficult to know how much money one has to spend per listener in a different part of the world in order to be able to guarantee satisfactory reception. In some places, that amount of money can be quite high. In other places, you can run one or two 250-kilowatt shortwave transmitters and be heard by 2 or 3 million people, which of course works out very cheaply. I think on average, though, it's fair to say that the cost of the project at present is within reason, and we don't think that it's going to be desperately expensive or be ruled out solely on cost grounds. That's at the moment.
Finally, from a reception point of view, who's this aimed at? Are you talking mainly to cable systems and to radio stations rather than individuals?
I think we are, really. The sort of equipment needed by individuals to get good reception from this satellite is still fairly sophisticated and fairly expensive. I don't think a great many people, individuals, in Europe are going to be equipped to listen. If they have the equipment, they've probably bought it in order to watch television on it. And although there will, of course, be the odd few people who are interested, most of the people who are really going to be interested and who will spend the extra money to get the highest quality from the satellite system will be broadcasters and cable operators.
You're never behind the beat with BBC World Service.
Part of the promotional tape sent out to cable operators in Europe. Let's flash back quickly to January the 30th this year, when British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher officially opened the new pan-European super channel service.
I want to say, not only to people here, but to our viewers in Europe, that I'm delighted to be here this evening at this super party for Super Channel to celebrate the launch of a service which will give our friends all over Europe the very best of British.
Well, audience research shows that viewers are having a hard time understanding the dialogue on some of the better quality British television programmes, without any German, Dutch or French subtitles to help them. Super Channel is therefore going to abandon its best of British policy and, starting in October, put out some programmes on two evenings a week in Dutch and German with English subtitles. After pressure from shareholders, Super Channel's output has been cut back and 20% of the staff laid off. Well, here at Radio Netherlands Media Network, we're off next to the Middle East with this story from Pete Myers.
Government-run Radio Lebanon resumed broadcasting this past Monday after a 10-day break in transmission. Two medium-wave transmitters on 836 and 989 kilohertz were switched off while urgent repairs were made to the studios in Muslim-controlled West Beirut. The Lebanese Information Ministry Director General, Dr. Humayid, said that rotting electrical cables in the studio had to be replaced and air conditioning overhauled. Radio presenters had complained of fainting fits and unbearable temperatures as a result of a summer heat wave affecting the Lebanese capital.
You are tuned to Radio Lebanon, broadcasting on 303 meters medium wave, 96.2 FM.
Radio Lebanon claims to be the only official voice in the country, though there are scores of commercial stations on the air with a wide spectrum of political views despite the 12-year civil war.
Earlier today, journalists gathered at the press centre in West Berlin for a press conference about the Berlin International Audio and Video Fair, the Funkausstellung, which opens its doors to the public tomorrow. You can spend days wandering around the huge halls where millions have been spent on presenting the latest in consumer electronics. Two items immediately sprung to our attention. Sony has launched a new combined shortwave and fax receiver, allowing you to receive and print out weather maps from a variety of sources, as well as enjoying shortwave broadcasting stations. Called the SR6768, at least tentatively for the Berlin show, this transportable radio covers from 9 kHz continuously up to 30 MHz, so that's long wave, medium wave and short wave, then 76 to 108 MHz for VHF FM reception, and the unit will also receive pictures from orbiting meteorological satellites on 137.62 MHz or via a suitable converter and dish on 1.691 or 1694.5 GHz. Tuning of this set is via a keyboard or a conventional rotary tuning knob. The receiver is the second Sony set on the market to offer synchronous detection for improved shortwave reception, with some 53 control knobs on the front, plus a very complex liquid crystal display. The new SR6768 is certainly intended for the high end of the semi-professional market. The photo material in Berlin shows the same model that's on display, except that the model number on the photograph is the CRF350. This model introduces what's called SAT, or Spectrum Analyzer Tuning. On the liquid crystal display, you can see part of the spectrum that you're tuned to. Imagine a window on, let's say, the 49-metre shortwave band. A row of bars shows you where the transmitters are on the air and which one you're actually listening to. If a transmitter goes off the air, you have a visual indication of this because the bar disappears. The set also has 350 preset memories for your favourite stations, although how you keep track of actually what's in all those memories is not all that clear. Sony think that once production begins, farmers, mountaineers and aircraft enthusiasts will be the main market, though I'm not sure if you'd want to cart this particular box of very advanced electronics up Mount Everest. How much is this new device going to cost? Well, Sony don't have a European retail price yet. We'll wait to purchase one off the shelf before we give you a full review. On the Philips stand, a new combined shortwave analog receiver and cassette recorder has come out after some considerable delays. It's quite low in price, aimed at the holiday maker rather than the shortwave specialist. The type number is D7476. Once again, we're working on a comparative review for you. One of the big attractions on the Dutch Philips and the West German ITT stands is a demonstration of a new television standard. Pete Myers has the details.
A European consortium formed by six leading European electronics companies has completed its specification for a pan-European satellite broadcast television system. It's called Euromac and has been designed to resolve the current debate over variants in the Mac standard, which have so far threatened the future of direct satellite broadcasting in Europe. The system has been designed to offer better picture quality than currently seen in Europe, providing the user purchases a new TV set with provisions for the Euromac. In the long term, the Euromac has the built-in capability of high-definition television pictures. This puts European industry back in the running against the Japanese Muse high-definition system that NHK Radio Japan wants to become a world standard. But one of the main concerns has been resolved by the Group of Six. Consumers will only need to purchase one type of satellite receiver and decoder to watch all the channels that he or she has paid for. Until now, there has been the danger that different DBS channels might require different types of black decoder boxes.
The German Teletech service has completely reorganized itself today, making it much easier to access news, weather, consumer and sport information on specially adapted televisions. Until now, you've needed a lot of luck and patience to find the material you needed. One thing you won't find on the European manufacturer stands in Berlin, at least not for public view, is a digital audio tape recorder. Although these DAT recorders are already out in Japan, the initial sales of DAT recorders has been very disappointing, and the reason is simple. You can't buy any pre-recorded music cassettes for DAT. As Bob van Meurs, director of the Consumer Electronics Division for Philips International, has been explaining to me, DAT is having problems because the recordings it makes are too good.
You most probably have heard that that we have still a tremendous problem by getting cooperation of the software industry. And as long as we don't have pre-recorded tapes, and there is no chance in the future that such tape will appear, we think there is no chance that there is a market. So we, as Philips, we think we should first harmonize the interests of the various interest groups, in this case software and hardware industry, and the discussion is going on. When that discussion will be finalized is difficult to say.
What's your opinion of the CBS spoiler system they proposed in the States?
Well, at the moment, this is apparently the only system which apparently works. We also regret that it is perhaps not perfect, and we invite everybody to bring a more perfect system. But as long as there is not a more perfect system, and that this could work to protect the interest, we will support it.
You will find another concept we mentioned on Media Network a few weeks back on the stands at Berlin. As well as audio, you can put up to 5 minutes of video plus 20 minutes of audio onto a standard 5-inch compact disc. The system's called CD Video, and the companies are looking to the European youth to buy clips of their favourite artists on this system. The price of a gold-coloured CD Video disc isn't yet fixed, even though this will be crucial in deciding whether the system is commercially successful. But a home unit that can play a variety of sizes of these new discs will cost in the region of $700 here in Europe as from January next year. But if you're giving the consumer high-quality videos to play with in the home, isn't there the same temptation to make illegal copies onto a videotape recorder?
Of course, CD video is a unique thing because you combine the perfect audio and video, and at the moment, to put it on the recorder will not be an easy thing. However, we also talk about introducing of a spoiler principle, different because we talk about video. There are ideas and we have discussions.
Why have you chosen for these different sizes of discs? You've got an 8-inch disc, you've got a 12-inch, you've got a 5-inch, even talk of a 3-inch disc as well.
Well, every disc gives an opportunity to the customer and also to the supplier of the software to give a unique application on that disc. Of course, a 3 or a 5-inch will be much cheaper than a 12-inch. And if you only need 3 or 5 minutes to bring your message or your music, you want to do it at the right price point. And especially the smaller discs, the 5-inch, are interesting for the youth, for the youngsters. They can put clips and so on. Of course, the 12-inch is then better suitable bringing a film or bringing operas, which is another kind of public, which is also another kind of software supplier.
Do you see then in the long term that the CD video then replacing the idea of hiring a videotape for a film?
We are discussing it with the film industry. The film industry would like to use the CD video to produce collectible films, films which have a long-lasting interest of the public. At the moment, we are talking with them, discussing with them about bringing, let's say, 600 titles of the most famous films of the past, collectible items, where anybody would like to have it, and not just to rent it for a weekend.
But you've tried that before with the VLP, haven't you? Because they were rather expensive, these 12-inch discs.
Then there was no real support of the software industry, so we have spent this case a very long period with a lot of demonstration discussion with the software industry, and we are now very convinced that they will support. When LaserVision started, we had to organize the whole software at our own risk, and that apparently was not so successful. However, you must not forget that in Japan, it never failed. It came. Today, there is even a market. And even in the United States, still, you can see in a lot of shops still laser discs going on. So the market basis is there. The expansion depends now on the real support of the software and, of course, on the real support of the hardware companies.
What about the 3-inch CD? That seems to be very small. You can't put much on that.
If you would bring a 3-inch, we think it especially could be of interest for the data world because you can still put a lot of data on. Compare it, for instance, with a mini floppy disk. To use it in an existing player, you need an adapter. First, the availability of the adapter could be a problem, but secondly, there is a chance that the adapter could destroy the edges that give certain technical disadvantages and even could hamper, perhaps, the quality image of the CD. That's one of the reasons why we think we should be careful with the introduction of such a product. Adapters are not very welcome, neither by the software industry nor by the customer.
Bob Famursa Phillips. Sony's announced it will put some music on a 3-inch compact disc, but if other software manufacturers don't follow, it'll simply be a gimmick. We'll be looking at DAT more closely in a future programme. Phillips has announced that it's found a way to record onto a special type of compact disc, but it's only in the laboratory stage at the moment. Even if it is perfected, it could set off the same objections by the music industry that we've seen with DAT. Well, in Berlin at the moment is Wolf Harrant of Austrian Radio, researching items for his excellent German-language media show. And he's got some news for us. Wolf.
Hi, Jonathan. What would you think of a station that calls itself Radio Občina and broadcasts in Slovenian language? You would probably suppose this is a Slovenian station.
As za vaše dobro počutje, vedno z vami Radio Občina.
No, you're wrong. It's an Italian station situated about 4 kilometers from Trieste. The main purpose of Radio Občina is to serve Slovene listeners from both sides of the border with a local private independent program. The audience is not only Slovene. The station produces a special informative program for the Italian-speaking people as well.
Vrt bo lepši z rožami rastlinjaka Ferlica. V nabrežini številka 10 zraven železniške postaje. Telefon 200-571.
Per avere un bellissimo giardino ammirato da tutti, rivolgiti ai vivai Ferlica ad Aurisina numero 10.
This transmission has the goal to fill the lack of information concerning the Slovene way of life, especially in the Italian area, because not always they are correctly informed by local Italian newspapers or television about the Slovene minority in Italy. Radio Občina is broadcasting 24 hours a day on FM, and they plan to run a DX program, and this is where I come in. They have asked me to ask your listeners, Jonathan, to contribute to that DX program, either in German, English, Italian or Slovene.
Thanks, Wolf, and if you'd like to contact that station, simply drop us a line and we'll give you the address. Back in Holland, the television news last night featured this sound. Personal computer enthusiasts in the Netherlands have made a program which allows them to make free international telephone calls. The computer simply imitates long-distance access tones and routes the call via Denmark, because curiously it's the Danish PTT that's footing the bill for these free calls. The details have appeared in a personal computing magazine now on sale in the Netherlands, whilst the Dutch PTT is working on the problem rather quickly. We're back in 7 days with more by now.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static. Some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.